Once there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Well, hello, folks. Welcome back to The Light of Day. This is the second hour of The Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, broadcasting live in the Sonora Desert, just outside Tucson, Arizona, Saturday night, October 30th, 2010. Welcome to The Light of Day show. Well, this is show number 32. And if you folks want a recap of the first hour, I've just been reading various articles and playing sound bites. In terms of the space shuttle going up Wednesday, I also wanted to mention that NASA is still waiting to hear from the White House if the space shuttle Atlantis, the current middle child of the U.S. orbiter fleet, will get a chance to fly one more mission. NASA is hoping to get a chance to launch the shuttle one more time in June of next year to deliver cargo and supplies to the orbiting laboratory. Well, keep in mind, folks, about June of next year is going to be Jupiter's closest approach to the Sun, and if Planet X is indeed biplanet, or by Jupiter right now, we would really start to see the solar storm start to unleash off the Sun. That's just something to keep in mind here. You know, you'd have like a double whammy effect because you already have a body out there, Planet X, which is anywhere from, oh, let's see, it's anywhere from 7 to 15 times the mass of Jupiter. It's actually a big iron cannonball. Now keep in mind, on Planet X's closest approach to Earth, which may be as close as 14 million miles, I actually looked that up, and that would be, if you think about the distance from the Earth to the Moon, it would be 62 times more farther out. That would be Planet X's closest approach to the Earth. And just think, folks, that distance can cause tremendous cataclysms here. 62 times the distance from the Earth to the Moon out from us. Well, I actually found this article about the Terminator type, a scenario that we could be facing here soon. You know, I just had it in front of me. Here it is. This was sent from Kimberly in an email this morning. This is actually an exclusive alert put out by Raider News Network, an urgent and special plea by Tom and Nita Horn. The Raiders News Network founders ask online friends to help them spread this word. It was actually posted 4 days ago by Tom and Nita Horn. It says a nefarious clock is ticking. According to secret government reports cited in Forbidden Gates, the human enhancement revolution will begin in earnest within the next 36 months. Unprecedented announcements will follow the 2012 U.S. presidential election, detailing plans for large-scale technological reinvention and far-reaching morphological transformation of the species, which will begin via military adoption, then quickly move out to the rest of us not engaged in warfare. This vision is international, intellectual, and under codification by government advisors, bioethicists, law professors, and academics, in which use of genetics, artificial intelligence, synthetic biology, and nanotechnology will provide tools for radically redesigning our minds, our memories, our psychology, our offspring, and even perhaps, as former investigative journalist for the Washington Post, Joel Guru claims, our very souls. Unfortunately for mankind, the related September 2010 U.S. National Intelligence Council and European Union Institute for Security Studies report, the May 2010 Rockefeller Foundation Scenarios for the Future of Technology and International Development report, and similar private and published U.S. government security scenarios envision this technological and cultural shift as not only forecasting a future dominated by a new species of unrecognizably superior humans, but ultimately an unfathomable war, both physical and spiritual, that the world is not prepared for. It will be fought on land, within the air and sea, and in dimensions as yet incomprehensible. Even so, these synthetic forces, which overshadow man's wholesale annihilation, are quietly under design in leading laboratories, public and private, funded by the most advanced nations on Earth, including the official governments of the U.S., France, Britain, Australia, and China. As a result of progressive deduction, reasoning, and problem-solving in fields of neurotechnology and cybernetics, strong artificial intelligence, or Artilects, will emerge from this research, godlike, massively intelligent machines that are trillions of times smarter than humans, and whose rise could prove profoundly disruptive to human culture, leading to a stark diversion between philosophical, ideological, and political groups who either plan to integrate with the newly evolved life forms as the next step in human and technological evolution, or who view this as an incalculable risk and deadly threat to the future of humanity. This goes on and on. If you folks would like this, just please email me. But the point here is, folks, remember what Lucas had said? He thinks that eventually the elites will be underground when the cosmic event happens, and they'll have their robots going above surface to enforce the law. Now, Gianni Hayes also has some book or idea or something that there's these clone soldiers for the New World Order Army. That may tie into what Lucas said. I really think there is a Terminator-like reality coming our way. It makes sense that they would roll out all this high-tech black ops technology when they're really going to need it. And, of course, they would need it to find survivalists out there above that are still lingering on the surface world after Planet X passes. Because, like John Moore has also stated, there are already 200-year-old existing plans for this New World Order will actually allow them to take advantage of the fact with Planet X passing, and after the Earth changes, they'll be able to come out with their shiny New World Order intact and ready to rule the planet. And what better way to roll out their high-tech black ops technology with things like super soldiers and that to patrol the surface world and enforce the law after the cosmic event transpires? It just makes sense to me. This is some pretty heavy information I'm getting into, folks. It really is. Well, I have a soundbite here I'm going to play by Cheryl Nelson. Let me see what time the break starts here. We actually got about 2 minutes. So I'll play Cheryl Nelson's soundbite after the break. She actually has a terrific website. I think it's called Earth Changes Central. For some reason, I can never remember the sign of it. I think it's called Earth Changes Central Surviving PX. And she has some of my stuff posted on there. She has John DiNardo's stuff posted on there. And we'll be back. You're listening to Light of Dan Orion. Stay tuned.
Yeah. There's a sky. Dream beneath the day.
Well, hello, folks. Welcome back to Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on Orion, Saturday night, October 30th, 2010. I actually had my door left open a little bit, and some stray dog in the neighborhood got in the house. I had to get him out. Well, he's got a lot going on around the Light of Day house. That's for sure. Well, before I play Cheryl Nelson's soundbite here, I did want to mention my thesis that I put out on the 5th of October. It's a thesis on the status quo of the passage of the Death Star. Most of you folks may have already heard this, but I still like to read it from time to time. Here's my current thoughts on the continuity of the human race as we begin to witness these Earth changes begin to go into full force and effect. Continuity of government folks had until December 31st of last year to finalize their contingency planning with preparing their underground shelters, according to one of John Moore's classified sources. The elites will, of course, head underground and possibly to off-world bases where batch consignments of worker bee slave labor colonies have been established. The British TV documentary Alternative 3 leaked this out to the masses in June 20th, 1977. This is something Bill Cooper even talked about, folks. The three alternatives provided were Alternative 1, which was designed to drastically reduce the human population on Earth, Alternative 2, to construct vast underground shelters to house government officials until the crisis had stabilized, and Alternative 3, to establish a Noah's Ark colony of humanity's best and brightest off of the planet, preferably on Mars. Now, you remember what I was just reading to you folks here, this 100-year starship that was leaked out that DARPA's working on, that they want a one-way trip to Mars. So here we're talking about something from 1977, and, you know, I had this dot connector tonight about DARPA leaking out their 100-year starship, which is a one-way trip to Mars. Great dot connector. Now, we may also hear about world-renowned dignitaries dying or committing suicide or just flat-out disappearing as an indicator that they're heading underground. Another signal would be the shutting down of Washington, D.C., and that, of course, could be accomplished with their weather modification technology. Bill Cooper warned that communications would become jammed as well. Now, as the Death Star closes in, the Internet will become highly controlled or flat-out shut down in order to control the astronomical community and others who will start sharing imagery of Planet X en masse. This staged alien invasion or UFO flyover false flag terror agenda slash deception may begin shortly before and or during the Earth changes in order to calm down the masses and provide them with a sense of comfort and reassurance that everything's going to be okay. It'll be alleged that these beings are very much like us and here to save us and protect us, when in fact no real physical extraterrestrials will be here. I lost my spot. Just hang on. Okay. One of the reasons given that these beings are here to protect us would be to save us from environmental disaster or from the detonation of nuclear weapons, when in fact Planet X is the real culprit of the climate change. The beings we see, if any, will be genetic constructs like that the military black ops boys have created in their secret underground biogenetic laboratories at places like Dulce, New Mexico. Those so-called alien abductees in my labs and contactees with their implanted microchips will be used by the elites for purposes still unbeknownst to me yet. In my opinion, those contactees who think a mass evacuation will occur by starships will be in for a major surprise when they discover that the ships they're in are actually high-tech black ops anti-gravity craft like the Lockheed TR-3B Triangles built by the terrestrial-based military-industrial complex. These contactees will be ushered away to work for the elites when they think they're being spirited away to some off-world location to be saved from the cataclysms. This deception may occur at the August 2012 Olympics in the UK, at least according to talk radio show host Ronnie McMullen and his highly credible insider sources. The high-tech black ops stuff will continue to be rolled out while the elites are living underground in the form of autonomized slash robotized drones, super soldiers, etc., in order to surveil the surface world for survivors and to enforce the law. So-called video cameras to catch speeders and red light runners, which are blossoming up all over the place exponentially right now, plus all the Big Brother tracking chips, will be used to see who is leaving the major metropolitan areas. The elites want the masses contained to the cities because when Planet X passes by, violent cataclysmic solar blasts will incapacitate the infrastructure in the cities, and the kill-off of the population will become easier this way. Plus, finding any remaining surface world survivors will also be easier because the cities will be under martial law at that time. FEMA camps will either be activated in order to keep coastline refugees from ensuing tsunamis out of the camps, or perhaps to contain refugees. Now, my research associate, John DiNardo, has some conflict with that idea that, yeah, right, they actually want to use FEMA camps to save people. He doesn't think so. So who knows what the FEMA camps are really all about. But anyway, those so-called alien abductees in my labs and contactees with their implanted microchips will be used by... Oh, I already read that. For some reason, I got this doubled on my notepad here. As the Earth changes transpire, survival communities will be established in the boondocks. Have you noticed the survivalist-based TV shows lately? They're conditioning us for these eventualities, and the elites are warning us in their twisted mentality via the entertainment industry that we do indeed have a chance to survive, but only if we're at least as smart as them to figure it out. And those remaining survivors in the boondocks who are not prepared will become victims of the revised New World Order architecture, who will now control the food and water supply unlike anything ever imagined. Localities like the Norway Seed Vault will become one of the most sensitive areas on the planet to go to in order to locate non-GMO food. So I hope you folks enjoyed that. Let me see how long we have until the break. Well, I'll play this soundbite by Cheryl Nelson here, and then we'll continue it after the break. Let's see, she's on track number 4 on my CD player, so let me pull that up. Here it is, folks. Please enjoy this. This was made by Cheryl Nelson.
Hey, have you heard about a rogue planet in our inner solar system called Planet X? It's a brown dwarf star said to be 4 times the size of Earth and 23 times its mass. It's heavily magnetic, and in the not-too-distant future, it's going to be passing Earth. It is the source of escalating Earth changes. You know, bigger and more frequent earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, bizarre weather. Today's topic is related to how to survive that close passage, and today we're going to be talking about safe distances from bodies of water. Over the past 7 years or so, I've researched many sources about this incoming planet and recently read a review of Eric von Daniken's newest book, Twilight of the Gods. And I noticed an interesting comment. The reviewer says that...
Folks, welcome back to the Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on Orion Talk Radio Network, Saturday, October 30th, 2010. Well, I'm going to play this approximately 4-minute soundbite that Cheryl Nelson created for me. I think her website is Earth Changes Central Survive PX. The sun's going to be coming up here before I know it, so I'm just going to play this soundbite and go straight into the John DiNardo, the Gianni Hayes radio show, The New World Order Disorder from Wednesday night, where her sidekick Andy Nunez interviewed Gilbert Erickson and John DiNardo. So you might not hear from me now until next week, but I got to get these sound bites covered. So please enjoy, folks.
Hey, have you heard about a rogue planet in our inner solar system called Planet X? It's a brown dwarf star said to be 4 times the size of Earth and 23 times its mass. It's heavily magnetic, and in the not-too-distant future, it's going to be passing Earth. It is the source of escalating Earth changes. You know, bigger and more frequent earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, bizarre weather. Today's topic is related to how to survive that close passage, and today we're going to be talking about safe distances from bodies of water. Over the past 7 years or so, I've researched many sources about this incoming planet and recently read a review of Eric von Daniken's newest book, Twilight of the Gods, and I noticed an interesting comment. The reviewer says that he speaks of the Bolivian archaeological site of Tiahuanaco and the platforms of Pumapunku, and both of these locations are over 13,000 feet in elevation. And despite this altitude, these Bolivian sites show strong evidence of flooding. So could the flooding have been caused by rising sea levels or tsunamis caused by the passage of Planet X sometime in our distant past, just like we saw in the movie 2012? It's a good question. While von Daniken speculates that the huge stones which paved those locations could have been used as a dam, he doesn't know for sure, and we have to consider other things too. So can water, especially seawater, get up that high? Well, think of Noah's Ark and the Noah flood. The Ark was said to come to rest on top of a mountain as the waters receded. And this mountain has been historically believed to be Mount Ararat in Turkey, and it has two peaks, the taller of which is almost 17,000 feet above sea level, and the lesser of which is almost 13,000 feet above sea level. That is over 2 miles above sea level, folks. That is up there. Now, factor in that some sources are indicating that the upcoming passage of the dark star is going to be worse than previous passages. Yikes! But how do we know for sure what a safe elevation will be? Well, when you don't know something, look at something or something that does know. And in this example, look at the U.S. government. It's moving its base of operations to the high peaks of the Rocky Mountains in Colorado. Another source, John Moore, has said that the U.S. Navy personnel in the know are relocating to the Ozark Mountains. So that should give you ideas of safe elevations. Okay, so one example might have been a dam breaking. Another example of flooding at high elevations is an unproven flood of biblical proportions. But are there any other historical records that speak of how high the water rose? Well, geological records speak to that. In an update to the El Teinon impact, which was an asteroid impact of 2.15 million years ago, it stated the evidence of the effects of large tsunamis in terms of relocated rocks is found widely throughout the Earth. The most extreme example being in Hawaii, where unconsolidated coral is found at 326 meters above sea level. That's nearly 1,000 feet above sea level, folks. Thus, you need to get away from coastlines. But how far? Well, from what I've read, it would be prudent to be at least 200 to 300 miles inland from any coastline and well above 1,000 feet in elevation. And that's today's tip for those of you who are preparing to survive the coming passage of Planet X. Forewarned is forearmed. Planet X is survivable if you prepare, not just physically, but mentally and spiritually as well. Thank you.
John, it's been a few weeks since you've been on with me. Since then, have we got some new revelations about Planet X?
Well, there have been a lot of new Earth changes that we have been seeing. We've been seeing increased weather, meteorological disasters. I've been noticing that the jet stream has been changing even more drastically than it had been over the last about 8 years since I've been following the jet stream on the Weather Channel. The jet stream from around 2004 to 2009 was really bizarre compared to past decades, normal decades, in that the jet stream was undulating, forming what looks like a capital W, a letter W, all across the United States, with the peak of this W extending from Canada and the trough of the W extending all the way down as far as New Mexico, Texas, Louisiana, and his W would roll from west to east across the United States over a period of several days. This was a bizarre pattern, but it was consistently bizarre from around 2004 to 2009, when it began to change very drastically. It started to develop these huge, what looked like letter O's that in the jet stream pattern that would cover several states. But now the letter O's have gotten bigger, and I've seen recently where they cover the entire southeast United States. So we're seeing, and then the patterns of the jet stream are no longer forming a W, but there are two of them now. There's two waves, one wave above around the Canadian border and another wave of the jet stream, which is down along the Mexico, Gulf of Mexico area. So I sense that this change, drastic change in the jet stream, is showing that we're going through another phase in the approach of Planet X, and I get the feeling from other information too that Planet X is now approaching the ecliptic, coming up from below the ecliptic, which is that invisible disk in space on which all the planets revolve around the sun. It's coming up and getting to be close to shoulder to shoulder with the planet Jupiter on one side of it and the asteroid belt on the other side. This is where ancient historians tell us that Planet X has come through in the past, that is, between the orbital paths of Jupiter and the asteroid belt. So I think we're seeing changes now, too, with the crazy weather, which is getting more frequent and more intense and more diverse, every kind of bizarre weather you can imagine. And solar activity, too, is going through another new phase of bizarre activity.
John, I can tell you, today they were calling for something over here in Maryland. They were calling for thunderstorms, and we had a tornado watch. I went outside, the sun was shining, the wind was blowing. I got home tonight, it was blowing, it was windy. I don't know what to wear, what to do, whether to turn heat off, turn the air conditioning on. This weather just flips me out. Now I want to bring Gil on here, so I don't want to feel lonely here. Gil, what's your thoughts on this? What do you think about all this activity?
Well, the problem is that Wormwood, as it approaches, you're going to have waves and waves of different kinds of effects as it gets closer. In other words, what you have is a giant cannonball out there. It's not a planet. It's a little star. It's actually the sun's binary companion, little sister star. And it's probably a T-series or L-series class brown dwarf, so it doesn't have enough diameter to light up and glow like a red dwarf or a yellow dwarf like our sun. But it's big and it's heavy. It's at least the size of Saturn, could be larger than Jupiter. We don't really know because NASA's keeping that information classified. But it rotates at 90 degrees. It's the equator. Cuts at 90 degrees to the equator of the sun. So the sun is rotating and is rotating.
Oh, they say she died one winter. When there came a killing frost, and the pony she named Wildfire busted down its stall. In a blizzard he was lost. She ran calling.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the Live Dan Orion, Saturday night, October 30th, 2010. We only got about 10 minutes left. Man, the sun will be coming up before we know it. If you folks want to check out this, the full archive of what I'm playing here, you can go to my Archives Miscellaneous subpage, and it's posted under the John DiNardo and Gilbert Erickson sub section on that subpage. Also, by the way, I also have an MP3 under Gilbert Erickson's section where he begs to differ with Aurora Light of Vortex Network News that the HARP facility does not cause all weather control events like the Sumatra tsunami in 2004. There's folks out there that'll just pin it on Project HARP in a heartbeat that it's behind all the weather modification events, and it's not. So you might want to also check that out. Okay, back to the soundbite. Please enjoy, folks.
Light up and glow like a red dwarf or a yellow dwarf like our sun. But it's big and it's heavy. It's at least the size of Saturn. Could be larger than Jupiter. We don't really know because NASA's keeping that information classified. But it rotates at 90 degrees. its equator cuts at 90 degrees to the equator of the sun. So the sun is rotating and Wormwood is rotating, and they cut at each other at 90 degrees, if you would. So what you get is this wave effect, different things rolling in and hitting us, and then you'll get a small respite, and then here comes another wave of something. And it just keeps changing, and it depends, too, on where the Earth is in its orbital pattern, you know, during the annual orbit cycle.
That makes sense to me, Gil. Now, let me just get clear for the readers. You and John are talking about the same object, Planet X, Wormwood, this dwarf star, same thing, right?
Well, there's a little bit of a controversy there. What it is, that we refer loosely to Planet X. Planet X means Planet 10 or Planet Unknown, depending on your interpretation. And it was, the problem was raised in astronomy way back in the 1860s. When it was realized that the perturbation of the planet Uranus was explained by the orbit of Neptune, which led to the discovery of Neptune. But the problem was that Neptune was also perturbed. And it was easy enough for astronomers to pick that up because both Uranus and Neptune had nearly perfectly circular orbit patterns, except on the June solstice side of the solar system. Whereas if you took the Earth's June solstice, you stretch that line way out all the way to the orbital radius of Neptune. On that side, both Uranus and Neptune had problems. Okay? So Planet X, Neptune was the explanation supposedly for the perturbations of the off-track problems of Uranus. Well, it didn't quite work that way. When they found out that Neptune was also perturbed, then that led to we need to discover the next planet out. And, you know, this led to the discovery of Pluto, but the problem was that Pluto is just a big ice cube. It's the cube.
Yeah, they downgraded it. It wasn't even a planet anymore. Right?
Well, it isn't now, except in the state of New Mexico, by law.
But, okay.
No, it is. It's in the state of New Mexico, Pluto is still classified as a planet, but in the rest of the United States, it's not. It's a trans-Neptunian object. There's about 50 of them out there that qualify. Right. And they're planetoids, but they're not full planets. But the problem was then that when they discovered Pluto, of course, that didn't answer the problem either because Pluto was just so small, it couldn't perturb the orbit of a fly speck. So, you know, what in the world would make a big gas giant planet perturb? And so that led then, in turn, eventually to the discovery of this brown dwarf star problem. But that wasn't until the 80s when that was finally resolved. And then NASA went opaque and kept the information quiet. So,
folks out there, Miguel, all these little planetoids out there are part of what they call the Kuiper Belt, if I remember correctly.
Well, that's
so
where
this,
you find them, yeah.
Yeah, so this
sort of.
Thing, this.
Sort of.
Yeah. This thing's been out there. Nobody wants to admit it's been out there.
But Planet X, Wormwood, the dark body star, the Death Star, is not a planet. It's not a planet. It doesn't orbit in the ecliptic plane or even in the Kuiper Belt, which approximates the ecliptic plane roughly. It's at 90 degrees to the ecliptic plane in a long ellipsoid orbit. And so it's normal, perpendicular to the ecliptic plane. It's on its own orbit. It's very big. It's very heavy. It's like a big iron cannonball, Jupiter-sized. And it's a star. It's not a planet. But even right. when it's quite a ways away, it still has the ability to perturb and mess up the orbits of the planets that are most proximate to it. So on the June solstice side of the solar system, it was pulling down and causing grief for the outermost planets. That was way back in, 1821. They could see it then. Okay? They knew something was wrong. They just didn't know what. Okay?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm with you on that now. Dark star is on an elliptical orbit. That means it's been through before. How long ago has it been?
The last time was when the children of Israel made their exit from Egypt.
Oh, really? Okay. So it must have caused a lot of problems for the Egyptians at that time, right?
Caused a lot of problems for everybody. Blew things
okay.
up, you know, all kinds of earthquakes and volcanic eruptions. You had a land bed that formed between Arabia and the Sinai Peninsula. The children of Israel walked across on it, and then Wormwood just pulled a hole right under the Egyptians, and they went down. So, I mean, a lot of crazy things happened. Dumped
wow.
all sorts of red iron oxide dust into the atmosphere, especially down in the Sudan area, and that stuff washed down the Nile. It looked like the whole Nile had turned into blood. It was a mess.
Yeah.
It was a mess.
Sounds like it, you know. You know, and I guess it affected the insect population as well.
Well, you know, when you get these crazy magneto interactions and stuff, you got insects that'll just come out of nowhere doing bizarre stuff because the weather changes, makes the situation good for them, not for you or me or whatever. Again, this stuff comes in waves. It's just wave after wave after wave after wave of different kinds of destruction, different sorts of things that it can do. And it depends on where we are in our orbit. Our annual orbit with respect to when Wormwood comes through, it's a dance in three dimensions.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay, but it's coming back. I mean, it's coming
yeah.
closer and closer.
Eddie, there we have evidence the U.S. government actually announced that Planet X exists, and they have announced that they had spotted Planet X. I have in front of me the New York Times, Sunday, January 30th, 1983,
stating, you sent me a copy of that, John. I remember.
Right.
I showed it to
so
a couple
this,
people. They were amazed.
For people who are skeptical about this, this is an announcement from the United States government that Planet X does indeed exist and that they've...
Oh, I lost somebody there.
Hello?
Yep. I don't know. I'm getting a dial tone. Somebody got disconnected. Who's left with me? John, is that you? I don't know what happened to him. Yeah, hello. All right, well, Frank's going to try and get him back. I don't know what. I think they were invaded by denizens from the outer atmosphere there and got zapped for saying too much about Planet X. You never know. You know, everybody monitors these phone calls. So I probably got the Illuminati, Chaosians, the Satanists, and everybody else listening in here. So probably they were going to say something that they didn't want heard out in the audience tonight, and so probably got cut off.
No,
anyway,
well,
somebody who's back?
Okay, picking up where I left off, this article in the New York Times absolutely proves, not only this article, but several others in major publications, absolutely proves that the government of the United States, through its major National Aeronautics Space Administration, NASA, has announced that this Planet X both exists and that they have sighted Planet X using the infrared astronomical satellite. So it's really been announced and we have absolute proof of it. So for this, I'll try to give you a couple, just a couple quotations. One from the Dr. Ray T. Reynolds of the Ames Research Center in Mountain View, California. He says, "We're so sure of this 10th planet that there's nothing left but to name it," end of quote. And they say also in this article, the scientists from NASA say it's most likely a brown dwarf star. Now, a brown dwarf star, by definition, if you look at the definition of it, it's got to be like most conservative estimates, at least three times the mass of Jupiter. Jupiter's mass is 318 Earth masses. This thing, probably greater than three Earth masses, probably more like 5 to 10, would then be around 1,500 Earth masses, because of its great mass and its great electro, its great magnetic field, it can wreak havoc.
Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. The Big Shot of the Milliwatt. This is Micro 1650 AM, Tonawanda, New York.